I am unashamed. What about you?
So, Jace, I was when I was down at the my Southern Lair last week, I had this surprise text from your oldest son and daughter-in-law that said they were coming down there with some friends. And down there because they were wanting to play golf. And I was like, well, yeah, I'm here. I won't be here but another day or two. So I wound up not playing golf. But what interested me about it is they played golf where we always play at Peninsula.
The Peninsula.
And they had a young couple with them, I think, that are about to get married, or maybe they just got married. I missed out. But they work with Brighton. But it was really neat because, you know, the Kirby's were there with us. And so, you know, they hadn't really been around Reed since he's, you know, gotten older and matured as any person will do. So he's talking about all his business stuff. And I was watching Randy listening to your son and he was looking at me like, who is this person?
You know, it's interesting.
He's still thinking of Reed at 18 years old. I mean, Reed is a man that knows how to, he's building a business, you know, he's building a house.
I didn't know you were going to tell that. I didn't even know that happened, but
I figured you didn't.
I saw Kirby, within the week, a few days ago, and he said, "Boy, your son's really doing well." And I was thinking, how does he know how my son's doing?
Yeah, but what I didn't know is that your daughter-in-law plays golf, and so did her little friend. So it was these other two people were nurses, and so they all went and played golf. But apparently,
she's pretty good.
Oh yeah, that's what they were saying, which really surprised me. I didn't know
power.
That.
I mean, I was shocked first time I saw her play. She can smoke it.
Yeah. Yeah,
well, really helped. Reed is naturally gifted in golf with just power and finesse. I'm not sure how that happened, but
he got a lot of the athletic gene that came down, I guess, through dad.
Well, look, as a dad, I'm super proud of him, but it's also demoralizing when your son steps up there and hits it about 330 effortlessly. And I'm up there thinking, you know,
old age.
Cracking.
You're thinking old age is creeping in.
Yeah, I hit it down there about 250 down the middle, but still, it just the power. It's just ridiculous.
Well, Jace is still in that mindset, Dad, that he hadn't realized that he's beyond competing with the youth. You know, that's
you know, like I'm 75. Somebody said, "Man, what happened to your left arm? Hey, you know, the muscle."
Oh, here we go. We're back on that arm.
I said, "A bunch of it all turned and went that way." You know, and what do you do about it? I said, "That old guy said, I'll let it ride."
You're gonna get a new arm in heaven. You know what's interesting? The last time I played golf, which has been a while, I was out at the Squire, Weaver played with a buddy of mine who lives in Dallas. Now he was coming in town, so we went
DB?
Out to play DB.
Oh yeah,
and
he invited me.
He's actually, you know, just a stud also. Mm-hmm. So we're on about, I don't know, 14 or 15. It's really hard course, but we were just enjoying the morning. It was nice catching up. Well, here comes a golf cart, which I thought we had done something.
Because you have a history.
I have a history with golf courses.
And a nice golf course is this.
Reprimands come often.
Here we go. Because I'm looking at DB, and he's like, are they with you? I was like, no, I have no people here. So I don't know who this is coming. Because it was like they were on a mission. Well, the closer he got, he's like, oh, no, that's Sam. And turns out it was Sam Burns, who's a professional golfer, who just won yesterday his first tournament.
Really?
Of course, this is 3 or 4 weeks ago. He was practicing out there, but he knows DB. He went to LSU. And it was surreal because yesterday I didn't watch the golf or anything, but I was just seeing the day's events. And I'm like, I just talked to that guy. I just met that guy. He was out practicing. And now he wins his first PGA Tour. So congrats to him.
Oh, that's awesome.
And yeah.
It was like the time we were out there playing and David Toms was out there practicing because he was about to go to the British Open. And so we were out there like we were hitting balls and we go over because we know him and he's hunted with us. So we went over talking to him and said, yeah, I'm just trying to, you know, fixing to go to the Open next week. And I was like, it's surreal to me too because you're like, this guy's fixing to, you know, travel over there and play in a major.
Well, I mean,
did he win it?
I don't. No, I don't think he's ever won the.
Yeah, he's won one.
Maybe that's
he won the PGA.
Oh, okay.
He won the PGA. That's when he hit a hole in one or something with a five wood.
Yeah.
No, but this guy. But I noticed these guys are physical specimens. You know, they now the workout. His legs look like two tree trunks. I just noticed that.
So what's by the way? I'm not a golfing man. Never fool with it. But
people are going to find that
so
shocking.
So what's the optimum age when they seem to kind of get it all together?
It's gotten younger.
When do you get over the hill? Being nice here,
yeah,
because I don't want to offend anybody. But when do you reach a level years-wise where you say, you know what, you know, once you hit, is it 40? Is it 45?
It's before 38. 40. The prime is 25 to 35. Yeah, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and it's getting younger all the time.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, this guy's maybe 23, 24. Yeah.
So what you're saying, Jay, this golf is a young man's game.
Well, it is, because they're hitting the ball miles.
They're young and strong.
And yeah.
Arnold Palmer and
here's all
these guys, they got, you know, they were still hanging around.
Yeah, but here's
in
what changed.
50s.
Well, here's what changed.
60s.
In the old days of golf, you go back and watch, you know, early coverage when they had, you know, because it goes back before TV, you know, it was kind of older, fat, white guys that were playing golf. Nobody was really in shape.
That's right.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
And so, but that all has changed.
They weren't known for their athletic prowess.
These guys could
probably.
They were
known like for, you know.
Well, they could hit the ball.
Well, Tiger Woods changed all that.
Yeah, I guess that's
which
true.
My wife, shockingly, told me she watched that. There's some show out about him or something.
Yeah, there's like a documentary.
She thought it was enlightening.
So what you're saying is, if you had to give a news flash to Tiger Woods, basically, Tiger, your years, they...
Well, he just had a car wreck.
You don't want to say it's over, but...
How
do you coach a man to say, now you hope your earnings that you've made in the past will sustain you for the next few years, but
I don't think that's going to be a problem. But it reminds me of that country song, I'm on the backside of 40. Once you hit 40, I mean, I think they know.
Well, I'll put it this way, Dad. The oldest major age for a major winner was Jack Nicklaus at 46.
I mean, that's the oldest
that's
one.
That's the oldest in the history of golf.
Tom Watson
should have won at 63.
The year Stuart Sink won the Open, which I felt sorry for him because he seems like a nice
guy. Yeah.
I mean, his wife had cancer. It's an incredible story. He just won 3 or 4 weeks ago at Hilton Head.
I mean, I have no malice, none, for any golfer. I'm just trying to kind of get a picture of it. I played one round, and when asked, so what do you think? I'm like, I think this would be a lot of fun if you were good at it.
Yeah.
And
but
I remember,
if you're not good at it, I said, this is a nightmare.
You actually hit the ball pretty good for somebody that's never played.
I remember you teed one up in the yard and hit it across the river. I was shocked, you know.
Just hand-eye coordination. You can't, you know.
But you got to remember, these guys, it's like Bubba, who we're friends with, said one time, you know, when he won the Masters for the second time, he's like, hey, all I got to do now the rest of my career is show up and wave. So I'm saying,
I like his thinking process.
I mean, he's like that, because you win the Masters once, what? It's lightning in a bottle.
Yeah.
You win it twice, you're showing up.
So what
and
do they
waving.
Pay? So it's the it's not only what you get that day, but what do they pay you if you win the thing? $1 million?
$2 million for the Masters.
$2 million. Okay, that's a pretty good seat.
But not really. You give half of it to the government.
So how much you give all these companies in their golf?
It's titleless. It's
That's where they're making the money.
All these guys.
Phil, these people are not worried about money. But what I do like is when, like, Dustin Johnson.
Were they rich kids to start with, or some of them were?
Some of them were. Bubba wasn't.
You know, yeah.
Bubba was very humble. Pensacola, Florida. I mean, you know, he had a very humble
beginning. Well, last year when Dustin Johnson won the Masters, people were shocked because he's Mr. Stud, and his demeanor is always cool. And, well, he got choked up when he won the Masters, and people were surprised because they were like, you know, here's a guy who's got millions of dollars. He's dating some supermodel, or, you know, it's like he don't care what happens. But it choked him up. They were like, "Was he choked up?" Well, you know, it was the Masters. I mean, it's more than about money.
If you win some of these contests, the supermodels they come with that.
Well,
I know that is that considered like a fringe benefit? I mean,
well, I learned that from our TV career, because I'm like, whoever this woman is, I was looking for the treble hook. because I thought if she's interested in me, guess what?
Jace, always have
that's scary. Feels
moral
scary.
Benefits of wisdom and the wayward woman. Be careful, Jace, when you get a warning against the adulterers.
Read Proverbs 7,
and to keep these golfers in line.
I love it. Well, I think the older I'm getting, the less I'm playing golf and the more I'm digging in the dirt because I've developed.
It's much safer.
Anybody that's a golf guru out there, I've developed the pitching yips. And I actually asked Sam when I met him, I was like, I got the pitching yips.
Well, where do you need to get so that you reach a level where people are not laughing at you for what you're doing? Because
I think in golf,
you could be laughed at, literally laughed off the course if you're not careful.
You have to laugh at yourself if you know you're not going to be very good.
Well, see them throwing, you know, they do something and a bad move. I don't know enough about golf to know when it was a bad move, but when they make a bad move, they like either break a very expensive stick, or they sling it out in the pond. So I've been thinking it's pretty expensive.
Yeah, there's an interesting story.
My funniest story I've ever seen. I can't remember his name, but who was that guy? When he took the putter and he just started banging it on his head until he broke it.
That's what I'm saying. I've watched some of that.
Woody Austin was his name. Yeah.
Antics tell me a lot. I don't want to fool with that. You know, when you're beating your own head with your golf club, I'm thinking, dude.
There was a South Korean in the Masters that just got played. He was like 3 or 4 under on day 2, and he's on number 15. And of course, the greens at the Masters are ridiculous. And he 3 putts.
And the pressure, begins to mount.
But he's like 4 under on the day.
So I mean, he's right there.
Yeah, he goes over and he's right by the pond because they, of course, you know, the media, it's slow motion because he 3 putted. He went over and he took that putter and he just slammed it like a quick jab into the ground. Well, it broke. And so now in the PGA Tour.
How do you get another club in a hurry?
It's against the rules.
You can't.
If you break your club. So look, this guy, which it doesn't matter, because you would think, oh, no, what's he going to do? He's going to use his 3-wood.
He putted with his 3-wood.
And look, and putted well. I mean, it wasn't like he was like if I
didn't miss any putt. I mean,
if I had to putt with my 3-wood, you know, add 10 strokes to my score. I mean, because
you're speaking a language 3-wood, but as opposed to what 4-wood.
But I can
as opposed to a putter.
I can putt with my 3-wood.
A putter,
I'm actually pretty good at it.
A 3-wood, you hit it about. I hit my 3-wood about 240.
I am completely ignorant of the game of golf.
That's probably a good thing. So what I was gonna say this. I had before we. You want to take a break?
Yeah, let's take a break. I'm sure you guys don't know this, but you can increase your credit score by 97 points if you know how to get it, and which I found this out because we had to make a loan, and so we needed a higher credit score. You guys probably don't borrow a lot of money these days, but ScoreMaster, it's a new credit science that super boosts your credit score. Their average is 61 points in 20 days, and I think that's about what it raised ours, which was very helpful to get a lower interest rate for your loan. So that's kind of the idea behind the science of it, and that's the deal. They've come up scientifically with an algorithm that just bumps it up, so it helps you save money over the long haul. If you need this, if you own a business, having to take out some sort of a small business loan, these guys can help you. Check them out. ScoreMaster puts you in control of your finances and not the banks. Just takes a few minutes to enroll. ScoreMaster.com/Phil. That's ScoreMaster.com/Phil and bump up your credit score.
Before we give some ideas and thoughts on Romans, because that's where we're headed, I had a really a great occurrence happen Saturday, which we've been metal detecting in this place where there was an old plantation house. It's a couple of hours away, you know, from my house. Well, then the neighbor, I told you the story, who had had a cleft palate, he gave me a check for the Mia Moo fund, you know. So, well, we were going back there Saturday. Well, we got there. Well, the original place we went, they were removing some trees. And to a metal detector, when you disturb the ground, there's opportunity here. Because
there's a carcass, the vultures will gather.
So look, this guy, old Bob, I looked up. He's almost running. He's an older gentleman, but he's like, they're disturbing the ground, you know, come over here. Because when I got there late, I didn't even know where they were. And all these people are calling me today. So I go over there.
If it's somebody famous, just answer it and we'll put them on the podcast.
And I stepped 10 feet into the new dirt and bloop, 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 bloop. And I dug up a seated Liberty Dime 1876 that looked like it just came out of the mint.
1876.
Beautiful.
That dime had been in the ground a long time.
So what I was going to tell you.
I wonder who dropped it.
So Murray wasn't feeling well. You know, he's my right-hand man. And he's going to be, we're going to, on this show that we're going to do, which they said for me not to talk about it. But I said, wait a minute, Unashamed.
Well, why are you talking
and
about
it? Because it made me angry. I haven't signed anything yet. So I'm like, it's a free country. Unashamed Nation started this.
That's right.
I mean, I said, let's do a poll. If you want to do the show, let's do the show. And they're like, oh, everybody's scared, you know. Oh, we don't want to what? We're going to do a pilot episode. And if the network, which I won't name, likes it, then we'll do more shows. So we're getting close to that happening.
So you were given a gag order, which you're now defying.
I'm defying because I thought Unashamed Nation built this. So
plus, deep in your heart, Jace, you don't have to have this.
Exactly.
and number two, Robertsons don't like to be told what to do.
Well, I'm like, wait a minute. We haven't even signed anything yet. Why are you telling me not to talk about it? I'm bringing these people with me. They caused this.
I would think you would want the secret to sort of be made manifest.
I don't know what's wrong with these people. So they all sit in a room and they're like,
that's right,
don't say a word. I'm like, there's no crime that has been committed. I get it if you're a criminal and you go in there, because the more you talk, the deeper the hole. But the holes that I'm digging has nothing to do with a crime. These people gave me permission. We're going to do a show about it. We need to figure out a point to the show.
Yeah, you got
to
have a
point. What's the point? But they say some of the most famous shows are about nothing.
Well, Seinfeld made a whole career, the show about nothing.
I think we're into that camp. So anyway, I was going to tell you about the hunt, though, because I learned a valuable lesson. Because, and look, this is a confession of sorts. Usually, you know, we're talking about the Bible and we're trying to, you know, change the world in Jesus, make it a better place. But every once in a while, you realize that you're doing something that could be done better. And so I'm going to have a little bit of a confession here. And I got to appreciate Murray. So Murray doesn't feel good, but I found this half dime. And old Bob finds a diamond ring. Gold with three diamonds.
Wow.
And I'm like, oh my goodness. I mean, we're cackling. And so we send Murray. We're like, does this make you feel better? He's like, I'll be there in 2 hours.
I didn't realize it, the treasure hunting, what you're doing with the thing, it's medicinal.
Oh, yeah. It warms the soul.
As a healing quality.
It warms the soul. So Murray finally gets there, and of course, they're just disturbing the dirt everywhere. It looks like a bomb, you know, hit this place. They're moving.
But that's
trees
that's
we're loving it. It's new ground. We're finding different things, you know, and Murray kind of went off into new ground that we hadn't gone on this property. And I hear a sound like I thought it was somebody in pain. And it's Murray. And they were like kind of running toward him because there was four of us, you know, together. Go over there. That joker finds a silver. A Spanish real, and the dates that they made that were 1773 to 1782.
Wow.
And you can only see the 17 because the back two numbers, but you know it was in that time period, which, look, this is from Spain. They only made it less than 10 years, and he finds one in Louisiana?
Wow.
Are you kidding me? This is like the holy grail for metal
detectors. All I can think of is cha-ching.
Well, listen to this. This is where I'm going with this story. So, he calls such a ruckus, and they're hollering, taking pictures. Well, the couple who owned the house, they're like coming up, what happened, you know? What's going on?
And you found that on my land.
Look, Murray, without hesitation, no hesitation. I mean, he's literally 10 minutes in it, and he's like, I want y'all to have this. This is y'all's land. This is an awesome find, you know. Well, old Bob was like, Murray, what are you doing? I mean, we'll give them a collection of the other.
Let's give them the diamond ring.
Like, no, it means more for me to be able to give you this. And, boy, I don't know. That just – it just hit me. He was literally filled with joy to give it to him.
It makes me glad to know that I converted him to Christ.
That's exactly right.
Oh, it was awesome. So,
Which tells me, and he's always has been, as you know, a very generous man.
That's right.
He really is. And it is their land, technically. Because Missy was like, I was telling her the story. She was like, well, shouldn't you do that anyway? I was like, well, yeah, babe, but it's like when you get a new car, you want to enjoy it for 4 or 5 days before you turn around and give it away. I mean, there's a period in there where you're like showing your friends. I was like, his first response was, look how awesome this thing is. Yep. Here, you take it. So
Did they take it?
Yeah, but they were like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But I think when they realize what it is, this is a conversation piece for your, you know, you put this on a.
How old are these people? Are they older?
I would say mid 30s.
Oh, so they know that. So, or they could look up on the internet and find out what it's worth and then say, because some people, you know, I mean, if you don't, you save all your stuff because you're not doing it for the money. But I mean, if something was super valuable and you could get some money,
I don't know. It's not in great condition. So I'm not sure it's worth a lot of money, you know, but it's worth a lot to somebody. So, you know, whatever it's worth, what you can get for
a collector or whatever.
But, well, no,
the next question would be,
what's it doing there?
This was made in Spain.
Yeah.
Who traveled over here with that in his pocket?
Well
you got to remember, though, it's the Spanish flag did fly over Louisiana for a period of time.
Well, that's the connection. Because, look,
the Spanish came before the French.
Yeah, they were.
So,
back,
you know,
in
what
1700.
Happens when this kind of thing happens? Well, now we're all over there. You talking about like a bunch of vultures in that area. So we're trying to ascertain.
It's like a good fishing hole. When somebody starts catching fish, every boat says.
Well, we usually show some respect. But when you find a silver Spanish rat, we're like a foot from the hole, just going
the
round
vultures,
and round.
The vultures have gathered.
Looking for the coin spill.
Everybody's
coin spill.
Shoulder to shoulder now.
Yeah. So anyway, we branch out from there. Well, then we start finding different things from an old Civil War camp. They camped right there, which we didn't even know. Because all of a sudden, I found a bullet. Then a guy found Bob found a button that had an eye on it, which was an infantry button. I mean, he was going crazy, you know, which I wasn't familiar with it, but evidently it was a great find. Well, then I find this little flat button that had a cannon on it, which was the, you know, he was like, oh, that's the armor, you know, division of the, what? Yeah, he was just spitting all this out.
Murray is quite the historian in this.
Oh, yeah. And it was a great, you know, just day. It was one of the best hunts I've ever been
on. So I got a
question
about that, but let's take a break. So this is a timely sponsor ad for what we talked about in the last podcast. It's a fairly new one for our Unashamed podcast, and it's called Fast Growing Trees. And we talked a lot about trees. Of course, one of the things that's interesting, and we ordered some trees, by the way, Lisa and I did, from Fast Growing Trees for our house. And some plants, and they're amazing. They came there. They when they shipped them, they came in the boxes. Everything was intact. That, you know, no issues with, you know, when it shows up at your house. Because sometimes you order stuff, you get your house that's halfway destroyed by the time it gets there, especially live stuff. They do a great job of that. We've got them in the ground. So we don't see how fast they grow, but that's one of their claims. And so it's we're excited about getting it. We want you to try it. You get a 30-day alive and thrive guarantee, which means they arrive happy, healthy, and ready for planting. And I can attest that that is true. So through June 30th, if you go to fastgrowingtrees.com/unashamed, you're going to get 15% off. 15% off for fastgrowingtrees.com/unashamed. That's fastgrowingtrees.com/unashamed. Get you some trees. So do you, was Murray and Bob, were they already historians and then they got into this, or did this drive them into being a historian? Because
they were historians first. Okay. Their love for history is what drew them to it. See, like with me, it's different. I don't know history very well. At all.
And your lack of educational prowess has been a consistent theme on this podcast.
I was street smart. I made it through most of my school smoking mirrors because I wasn't paying attention because I don't like being trapped indoors. When you trap me indoors, I start feeling claustrophobic and I can't concentrate. So when the teacher was talking, I was looking outside at a squirrel chasing
Plus,
a hickory
you,
nut.
You are the man that said, "Dad, I've learned how to get through this whole thing."
Yeah.
And I said, "How do you do it, Jace?" Jace said, "I can be looking at the speaker with my eyes open, but I'm actually sound asleep."
I am proud of that.
That would be a good skill set.
I'm proud
set.
Of that skill set.
Well, yeah. I did. I helped Jace. He says in his book, he rightly gives me credit for getting him through preaching school. But for those of you who hadn't heard this on the podcast, if you're a new listener, we talked about this a while back, that Jace's college career consisted of golf and first aid was the two courses he took at our local college.
My first semester, yeah.
His first semester. And he had,
So at this point in his life, he did not have a goal to be reached.
No. But he thought, I give him credit, he went out there. He
golf took, and what?
Golf and first aid.
Golf and first aid.
Because he figured those were two things he liked and needed. So, but he dropped out. So what I'm saying is, you know, when you can't really get through golf
and
first
we
aid,
wonder what happened to the country.
You're probably not a college man. I mean,
well, me and the professor had a little bit of a disagreement in the first aid class and it escalated quickly. And I just said, you know what? I'm not doing it. And it was actually over a spiritual conversation because I'm like, this is first aid. And this guy comes in here and starts pontificating on all the problems of the world. And I didn't agree with him. And I raised my hand. And so I was like, what are we doing? What's this got to do with first aid? And it just, well, from there, I thought... I'm not.
And then this led to the conversation.
He was part of the narrative that what they say is the author of life is salt water. That's where.
Well, you got to remember this, Phil. And you know what he would say to that? Well, you believe the author of light is dirt.
Created so, this from dirt.
No.
Well,
I
no, because we believe we came from dirt.
Well, right.
So you see what I mean?
Yeah.
It's the well, he was that type of conversation.
I believe if you're the author of life, you could take dirt and breathe right. into it.
That's my point.
And because of your power over the atomic structure of all things, you could actually make human beings out of dirt.
That's right. Or a rib.
Yeah.
But they don't have somebody taking the salt water and doing that.
That's
they
right.
just have salt water.
I think believing there's a being that can make humans out of dirt is no far-fetched than people who believe no salt water actually made us. I'm like,
yeah.
Well,
I was just
you
clarifying.
Hold on to that. I'll hold on to this.
Well, and the big question.
This has got payoff, but yours does not.
The big question of that is, and we've talked about this with evolution before too, is we still got salt water. And I'm not seeing it produce a lot of stuff except things are swimming around.
Oh, you got to give it time.
There ain't
in a million years.
Yeah, not enough time. Yeah, I got
somehow
it.
Another, this all evolved and happened, and then it stopped. It's the craziest. But I don't, you know, good luck. You'll need it. So to get back to my point, the hunting aspect drew me in, but I have to thank Murray because when I saw that, I thought, you know what, I need you need got to keep this in perspective, because you find this stuff and you think it's cool and you start a collection and it starts growing, and but all you're going to do is put it in a box somewhere and it's just stuff, even though it's cool history to find it because it was lost.
But it does tell a story.
It tells a story, but you should use it to find true treasure, which is more about the relationships and the people that you meet. So one of my neighbors out by where we have our bed and breakfast and the wedding venue place at Logtown.
That continues to produce you finding stuff. After as much as you find it, you still find stuff.
Well, one of my neighbors, they had an old cotton gin there, and I went and asked them if I could hunt it. Well, I did, and didn't find anything but modern stuff. So, but I was looking at the trees in his yard, and I was like, I mean, if I was going to have a place, even though I'd looked on the maps and it didn't show anything, it just looked like an old house used to be there. I said, do you mind if I check that out? Well, I checked it out. Oh, yeah, there was old bricks. And so I start finding stuff. So what I did was, based on what Murray did with giving that them, I took one of these glass case boxes, because I've been hunting there at my neighbor's 4 or 5 times. Well, because I tried to give him the first silver coin I found, which was, I think it was an 1898 dime. And he's like, no, you keep that. But through the times I've gone, now I've got quite the little collection. I found an old spark plug. Looks like, I don't know when the first spark plug was made, but it was in that range. I mean, it is cool looking. And not really on its own. And I found this welfare token. Now, I didn't even know we had welfare tokens, but at some stage, that's what it said. It looked like because I found them before that said luxury tax token, but this was like welfare, good for one. It was a $1. You could go to a store, I guess.
I didn't know the welfare system went back that far.
I didn't either. But
they were giving away money back before I knew they were giving away money.
Kind of sadly comical when I saw that. I thought, oh boy.
But a dollar could go a long way back in them days.
Well, that's right. And then I took my two best coins, because I thought, I put this from a spiritual light. I thought, it's the same way we do with giving, you know, to God. It's all His anyway. But we should give him the best, you know, off the top.
And first.
And I thought, this is their land. They've allowed me to go. Now, granted, they're not going to find this stuff without me. Or, you know, they're not. Most of these people, they don't care anything about getting into metal detecting. But I thought, you know, I'm going to make a little display and give it to them. I think I wrote them a note. I was like, allow me to reward your hospitality with a bit of history. And, you know, I signed it. I put a good Bible verse there, Luke 15.
Yes, you really are a poet. That was very poetic. That was a good way to put it.
Well, I thought that sums up what's happening here. But then the friendship that I made is worth more than this stuff we're finding. But it's good. I like it because I'm a million miles away. Right. It's beautiful. It, you know, it's something. It's a good hobby. And so what's funny about all that, I say all this, when Murray, the last part of this story, so now – our adrenaline got to pumping now, because now we're finding, we're like, it's a camp. We're on a campsite. And we started finding different buttons, and the guy found the end of a bayonet. And, you know, we found another. This was something for a knapsack. And, you know, Bob's telling us what everything is. I found this triangle thing, and that's this. And we found a harmonica reed, and we're just finding all these different kinds of buttons. And so, like, the pace is picking up, and we're going down to where they've been clearing. And so you're trying to find new ground, and I'm like at the edge of the lake now. It's like, boy, they probably, and I took a step and I stepped on a snake. And let me tell you, all the adrenaline, and all I just saw was the head pop up, you know, and turn around toward me. And it was like one of those moments where you black out. And I looked up, and I was 20 feet away, and I don't remember how I got there.
I don't black out when I see a head of a snake.
Well, I did. I literally had either I jumped 20 feet backwards, or I don't remember what happened. I went from there, and they were all looking like, what? I was like, a snake. I stepped on a snake. I don't know if it's poison. So one of the guys went, and he's still just sitting there. And I was like, non-poisonous, we're good. And I heard whack. Well, you didn't have to do that. I mean, but it scared him enough.
People don't. But, hey, let's take another break.
One of the best measures of how corrupt a country is how rich its leaders get while they're in office. They're not so good at passing laws or governing, but they're great at investing.
Imagine if every American could make money off of war.
In 103 days, that position ends up gaining around 103%. So she made, you know, $2 million plus her original two, so $4
million. I signed, co-sponsored a bill and made too much voluminous flair over it that I wouldn't be seated. So I shut up. The threats that fly around are just absolutely insane.
The Blaze Originals team traveled to Washington, D.C., home to one of the most brilliant financial minds in the world, Nancy Pelosi. In our documentary, Bought and Paid For, How Politicians Get Filthy Rich, we spoke to reps Matt Gaetz and Chip Roy, George Santos, and the bane of D.C. elites, Unusual Whales, to expose how our elected officials are beating the stock market and, more importantly, what we can do. To watch today, go to congressgetsrich.com and use code RICH to get $30 off an annual subscription to Blaze TV.
We've been on Light Snakes. Well, didn't you have a story? Wasn't there a story from your, I don't know if y'all were kids or whatever, when Tommy, y'all were picking blackberries, and I just remember something about somebody doing a superhuman.
It was a lesson in adrenaline.
Yeah.
Because he's below me on a bayou bank, and we're picking dewberries.
How old are you?
So we're 13,
okay,
14.
All right.
So we're moving along this bayou bank picking dewberries. So he takes a step, and I'm up on the higher bank, like the bank's like this. I'm up here on the top. He's down there at the bottom. Well, there's an old bayou down there. Well, I just look down there, and he's looking down at the dewberries picking.
Yeah.
But there are two cottonmouth Mexicans lying there with their head kind of raised up out of the water like that. And like, look, they're like this.
Wow.
They're big as the upper part of your arm. These were big cottonmouths. And I just looked down. I said, cottonmouths, Tommy. And then he was just fixing to step on them. So he was on one leg, on the left leg at the bottom. He was taking a step with his right, which is going to go right in the jaws of a huge, there were two of them. But the one opened his mouth. He just opened. I saw it mouth open.
That's what got your attention.
Tommy's foot, I got my attention. I looked down there and I saw a flash. Well, that was that cottonmouth opening his mouth, you know, fangs. I mean, Tommy's is this close, his right foot coming down on him.
If you're listening, that was about 6 inches.
He's on his left leg. He looks down and sees he's fixing to stomp on a bull Congo. He makes a leap. He just comes up the bank off the one leg. He comes up the bank.
How far?
Way further than any leap I've ever seen. So he just, it's a miraculous leap. But at first, it was just an adrenaline rush. But I bet him when he hit the ground in front of me, you know, closer to me, the snakes eased off out in there. I said, I bet you, I got a bet. He said, what's that? I said, I'm betting you can't do that again. You can't jump that high. He said, oh, I can jump that high. He got down there where he was. The snakes are gone. He could make it about halfway. That's it. The old adrenaline.
Typical redneck.
That's what
you almost died, but I have a bet.
Yeah.
I have an idea. Do that again.
But my point was true. He could not make that leap without a cottonmouth fixing to bite him because the old adrenaline is something.
That's
you know.
Why I was telling you. I looked up. I don't even remember how I got away. But I said
he was leaping and you were blacking out. That's the only difference.
I just don't remember.
I don't black out when I say
but I just
I move in a hurry.
But you know, I mean, you know where I was going with that. I thought back to the garden and the snake and then we're having fun, you know, and you don't put your hope and trust in things anyway. And it's more about the relationship. And I thought about, you know, in the book of Romans, we're going to study that. And the least read chapter in the book of Romans is chapter 16, which is the last chapter. And Paul, he goes through this long list, the whole chapter pretty much, thanking people that he's met along the way that have contributed. And it really is the same principle on all these churches that are meeting in various locations. And male and female, there's two women who risk their lives. There, you know, he starts off saying in 16:1, I commend to you our sister Phoebe, a servant of the church in where I can't pronounce that. I asked you to receive her in the Lord in a way worthy of the saints and to give her any help she may need from you, for she has been a great help to many people, including me. And then he goes to the next, which you know, you've heard of Priscilla and Aquila, or Aquila as El says, my fellow workers in Christ Jesus, they risk their lives for me. Then it goes to the next part, says, greet my dear friend who was first convert in Christ in the province. He was the first convert to Christ in the province of Asia. Greet Mary, who worked very hard. And it goes on and on and on and on. And it's the same concept in that the church is made up of relationships, people who are connected with God, and they use whatever resources they have to keep that going up. That's the big picture. So when you look at it in light of finding stuff, the greater story that's going on is meeting people, hopefully introducing them to Jesus, hopefully establishing churches that are not tied to some building, but more a group of people, whatever the building structure looks like. And so that's what I wanted. I just had a thought about, before we even get into Romans, I think it's helpful to read the last chapter first, because it seems like a lot of deep theology, and you're picturing in your mind, here's the Roman church, this grand, you know, building built in an incredible transformation of the culture. And you get to the end and he's thinking all these people that just seem like ordinary people meeting in their homes and giving of their money and their talent to try to further what they have in Jesus.
So I love all the Greek names in there too, which, you know, as you get going down in there, you see some amazing names. By the way, I was going to mention this, Chase, earlier, because the last podcast we talked about the dendrology being the study of trees.
Yeah.
So our crack staff here looked that up, Josh. And dendron is ancient Greek for tree. So,
really?
Yeah, so the dendrology, or the dendrologist, these guys, comes from a Greek root word about tree. That's because, you know, that word, we're like...
After I said that, it popped into my head that I should have said an arborist. You know, they have Arbor Day,
which is
kind of...
Plant a tree.
Plant a tree. Was it John
for
Denver?
Tomorrow.
Which, look, I'm not hating on John Denver.
I love John Denver.
Simply Rocky Mountain
thank,
High.
And thank God for a country boy.
My question,
thank God I'm a country boy.
My question, if you are, in fact, a bona fide, certified dendrologist.
Another appeal.
I would love to know, where did they come from, in your humble opinion, your studied opinion, because you're a dendrologist, you're studying them. Where did they come from?
Yeah, that's
good. Did salt water make them too?
No.
Did molecules?
You
come
know what
together?
They're actually going to agree. They're going to say the dirt.
Yeah, come out of the dirt.
The dirt.
The dirt made them.
Well, that's where they came. You said where they come from. They're going to say the dirt.
They
it's the obvious
dirt.
Answer.
But you
is
have to have
the dirt.
You would have to have some type.
Got to have a starting
well,
point.
Well, I agree.
Seed.
You got to have the starting.
I'm on your team.
Yeah. I'm seeing a little acorn. I'm seeing a little acorn, and it's a little round thing, and in a pin oak acorn is about like this, Al, about like that. And I'm looking at the thing, throwing some dirt, and I see this. I'm like, what in the world did that thing turn into? What I'm looking at that came from it, it just doesn't seem possible, because a squirrel will eat the acorn.
Every year for the junior hour,
and you look at it
100
years later, and it's producing thousands of acorns, making other ones, and I'm saying
it's a good point.
There's some raw power going on there.
Hang on, let's take our last break, Jess.
Now, where did that come from?
Every year when I taught the junior high, I'd bring in an acorn. We would look outside because
salt water couldn't have made it, because salt water kill an acorn.
Phil, they're going to say, you're missing my point. They're going to say, well, you believe we came from dirt. So you have to have an answer for that. It's who made the salt water. So we might have come from salt water, but it would have had to
Where'd the salt water go?
It would have to be God. I mean, technically, because the dirt got mixed with the salt water. I mean, I'll work with you on it. As long as we agree that God above created that to happen.
I'm leaning that way.
Yes. Design man demands designer.
Because the spirit of God was hovering over the waters like we talked about. So yeah. He was there.
I mean, I would, yeah. So I just wanted to bring that point up to say that most people, when they have a Bible study, you know, Missy said something to me recently that really made me think. She was part of a community Bible study where they were like, let's set our religious differences aside and let's just study the Bible. And she said there were hundreds of people that attended this, but they all broke up into small groups. And no matter where you were from, or she said most religions were represented there. But she said what she noticed after a while, and they studied the book of Romans, is why I'm bringing this up. She said, what I noticed is that every conversation that we had was centered around the church building. So it's like you read the verses and you discuss them and you talk about them. Case in point, she'd say, like, if you were talking about being a servant to or being humble to other people, well, all the comments would be about looking for opportunities at the church building to do this.
For the 2 or 3 hours you're there.
Yeah, she said, what was incredible to me, she said, I never noticed it before, that it just took her a few weeks to realize nobody talked about the times in their real life. It's like, we're here having a Bible study, we're studying the book of Romans, we're making practical applications as it only relates to the 2 hours that I'm part of the church and right now.
Right.
And she's like, that's why I concluded, and she's the one that brought that up. When we read, she's on Romans 16, this seemed like when you read this chapter, these people were living for Jesus every day.
Because
it's a great point.
Because the first sentence, we're back to the book of Acts, we're back to Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. This Jesus shows up. Paul, a servant of Christ Jesus, called to be an apostle for one reason, and set apart for the gospel of God.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole book of Romans. That's the whole book of, you leave Acts, you say, what was the focus of the book of Acts? Jesus died. Jesus came in flesh. He died, was buried, and raised from the dead. The book of Acts, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, I'm going to die, be buried, and raised from the dead. They're like, you're going to do what? And he repeats that from Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and then records what Jesus said actually happened.
Yeah.
Well, so my you, point get to is Romans, if you, only you get to Romans, that- he said, I'm set apart for that right there.
Right.
And what I'm saying is the focal point of a series of points, the flow of each sequence of events always points to Jesus coming in flesh, dying, being buried, and raised from the dead.
My point is, Phil, if you only shared that on Sunday morning or at church, in quotations.
Oh,
they're
missing the point.
This was a movement of people, which is why I told that all about the metal detector. And I'm like, the goal here is not to put a bunch of silver in a box. The goal is to meet people and try to show and share the ultimate treasure, which is Jesus,
right,
and the benefits of that.
Romans 1:1 tells you what the creed is. The city of Bill creed, but you say, where does it start? Well, it needs to start with all of these guys before us were set apart for the gospel of God.
And actually, the first 11 chapters of Romans is basically just a deep dive into what you just said.
That is correct.
So Paul explains it in a very, you know, deep way.
Everybody, he's going to start in verse 16, Romans 1:16, which is the name of our podcast.
That's
by
where
the
we
way.
Got our name from.
I'm not ashamed of the what gospel. Well, you said that's what he started with. Well, do you read through it? It's over and over and over and over. Jesus died, was buried, and raised from the dead. The first from 1:18 to about 3:21 is a group of individuals worldwide of all the peoples on earth and their condemnation without this.
Right.
Without the gospel, here's where you are. So it's the doctrine of condemnation, 118 through 320. You're like, it's a brutal read on what life is like for a human being without the gospel of God.
Well, it just really explains what we first brought up about the garden, about the curse of sin. Jace, to your point, I think it's really interesting because people are listening to this podcast on a Friday. A lot of them are at work because I talk to so many people. They got their earbuds in. They're working a job where they can listen to us. Mm-hmm. So you're at work on Friday hearing these spiritual truths and stories and stuff we tell to impact the people around you. And it is. It's working. So it is out of the building. It's got to be where you work. It's got to be where you live.
We baptized four people yesterday, and they were from four different states. They came from four different places, and they came, and they said, we came here for one reason, because our faiths, we heard it on y'all's podcast, is in the Jesus died for me. I had it written back behind me, right behind me in big letters, God becoming flesh, dying on a cross, being buried, and raised from the dead. That's all we told them. And I worked a little bit in the Romans, and I look, whether you look in Matthew, where you would start there, Mark, Luke, John, Acts, Romans, the focus is always on Jesus, who he is, what he did, like he said would happen, what he's now doing, the mediating work, and what he will do. You said it's all tied right there.
Well, I just wanted to bring up the point when you read this list in Romans 16 about people risking their lives. One of them, it says they were tested and approved in Christ. I'm like, how are you tested and approved? Others had people who had worked hard, and it gets to the end, and he greets someone that says, who's been like a mother to me. And when you start seeing all this, you realize these people were leaning on each other. They were encouraging each other on a daily basis.
24/7.
And he gets down to the end. He says, greet one another with a holy kiss. And I thought, you kiss people that you love and that you've been through things with. This was more than some kind of establishment that you're just setting up a camp and you're going to put a couple of hours in every week. I mean, they were being persecuted.
Yep.
They were having struggles, but they were not getting off that Jesus Christ is Lord. And to me, that's what I think you have to put in your normal everyday life and look for opportunities, no matter what you're into.
And to your analogy, and we'll close with this.
There was a little girl that walked up to me two Sundays ago, and she had purple hair, which is... it stood out. Her hair was purple.
It's a thing now.
I said, girl, how'd you get that hair? It looked purple like that. She said, well, what do you think? I said, it's a wild looking hairdo. And she said, would you pray for me? I said, sure I would. I've never seen the girl before in my life. So she said, my teeth are killing me. She said, I'm in misery right now. And I said, I tell you what, I'm going to pray for you, and then I'm going to get you to a dentist. And I said, he's going to fix your teeth, baby. Hmm. So I prayed for the girl. I got one of the brothers who meets her. He's a dentist. So I lined it up. She went to him, and he told me later, I said, send the bill to me. He told me later, he said, oh, I may split it with you. Don't worry about it. So he said, but we're going to fix that girl's teeth. So he said her mouth was in terrible shape. So I think he had to pull four or five of them. So the bottom line is we got her out of her misery with these teeth. And you say, what's the purpose of that? Point her to Jesus. Her sins can be removed, purple hair and all. And he can raise her from the dead. So you said, did the purple hair getting in the way of you trying to help this little girl out? The purple hair was not an issue. I didn't care what color it was. That's the point of keeping the gospel, at front and center.
Removed her sins. You are including Paul,
true story, by the way.
If you were greeting everybody, you could say, and the girl with the purple hair with the new teeth. All right, we're done, huh?
We're done.
Thanks for listening to the Unashamed Podcast. Help us out by rating us on iTunes. And don't miss an episode by subscribing on YouTube, and be sure to click that little bell to get notified about new episodes. And for even more content that you won't get anywhere else, subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/unashamed.